annual Media and Entertainment Conference in Sun Valley, Idaho, an event that had quickly become the epicenter of corporate power, influence, and deal-making, attracting everyone from Katharine Graham to Warren Buffett to Bill Gates, memorialized in lavish Annie Leibovitz photo spreads in Vanity Fair. Barry Diller was there. He and Eisner had resumed speaking after Eisner sent him some apples from the Eisner farm in Vermont, along with a conciliatory note. David Geffen was there, of course, as was Katzenberg, who was scheduled to speak on a panel chaired by Jack Valenti, chief executive and chairman of the Motion Picture Association of America. Eisner invited Ovitz and his wife Judy to accompany him and Jane on the Disney jet. Eisner used the time on the plane to press on Ovitz the advantages of joining Disney as president, and this time Ovitz responded positively. "I'm ready for a change," he acknowledged. "I think the idea of working together is great. We would make an unbeatable team." But in just what capacity Ovitz would come to Disney remained vague. Eisner liked to use the word partner, but in Hollywood generally, and especially with Eisner, partner is a loose, ill-defined term, often a euphemism for someone who is, in fact, subordinate. Coming from the world of agencies, Ovitz was unfamiliar with corporate hierarchies. During his time at William Morris, the agency had no formal titles, nor did CAA during its early years. Ovitz asked at one point if being partners meant they'd be co-chief executives. Eisner recalls that Ovitz said he wanted to be co-chief executive. However partners was defined, any notion of equality was a raw nerve for Eisner, touching on the anxieties he'd already expressed to Jane about Ovitz competing with him. It contrasted with Welles's willingness to cede the CEO title, which was so important to Eisner. Nonetheless, Eisner kept selling Ovitz on the idea of coming to Disney, stressing how many opportunities the company faced and what a great challenge running it would be. He tantalized Ovitz in confidence by mentioning that Disney had commenced talking with GE about acquiring the NBC network, a perfect opportunity given the early experience of both men with networks. At one point, Ovitz asked about the Disney board. "What if they don't approve me?" Eisner laughed at the suggestion. He went down the list of board members, ticking off the various ways they were beholden to him, assuring Ovitz that the board would do what he wanted. Still, by the time the plane landed, Eisner felt he and Ovitz were at an impasse over the issue of sharing top billing. Eisner later wrote that he'd been upset by the conversation. Later that evening, walking to dinner, Eisner felt pain in both his arms. He thought it might have been stress brought on by the Ovitz discussion, worrying about replacing Welles and Euro Disney. He hadn't been sleeping well. He stopped to rest. Of course, the pain might be a symptom of something more serious, though he preferred not to think about it. His father had had heart problems and had undergone open-heart surgery when he was 65. Eisner had begun taking cholesterol-lowering medication, and he took regular stress tests, though the last one had been 2 years ago. He alternated between thinking the pain was in his head and that he was about to have a heart attack. But he and Jane pressed on. Afterward, he, Jane, and Katzenberg, who had joined them at dinner, wandered into the indoor ice rink. Eisner mentioned the reorganization he and Welles had been planning and the stress of Euro Disney,